Hi, I'm Katarina Wigg. I'm studying in the Goldman Lab at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and my project is focused on breeding for resistance to Rhizoctonia and table beet. So today I'm going to be going through two of the screens that we did this past spring, one on PI accessions from the National Plant Germplasm System, and then one on commercial cultivars and inbreds. So to start off with, we're going to be going through some background on Rhizoctonia solani and Beta vulgaris subspecies vulgaris, which includes both sugar beet and table beet. We'll be going through the greenhouse screen protocol that I used, as well as the results from the two screens, and then talk a little bit about our next steps in our research, and then I'll be taking any questions or comments that you guys have. So Rhizoctonia solani is also known or referred to as crown and root rot. In table beets in particular, it's referred to as pocket rot because it leaves empty pockets in the field in the disease's wake. Symptoms include black cankers on lower petioles and dry, dark, rotted disease tissue in the root. It can overwinter as sclerotia, thickened hyphae, and bulbils in the soil. And within the Rhizoctonia complex, there are 12 different anastomosis groups that have been identified, and two of those in particular infect sugar beet and table beet. So typical management practices include seed treatments, in-season fungicide applications, crop rotations between 3 to 5 years, and other cultural practices. But in spite of all of this, there are both losses in the field and during processing. About 24% of sugar beet acres in the U.S. are affected, and in severely infected fields, up to 75% of table beets can be affected as well. So there actually has been some work on Rhizoctonia in sugar beet. In 1957, the program in Fort Collins, Colorado, was started by John Gaskill. Later on, Lee Pinella, who's pictured down below, joined the program as a breeder. And then they focused on mostly mass selection and recurrent selection methods in the field as their main breeding techniques. And since the program's start, there's been several resistant lines that have been released. Further research from that group determined that within sugar beet, resistance is polygenic. It involves at least two loci, two or three alleles, and modifying genes in some populations. They found that broad sense heritability was about 0.65%. And then dominance effects are present in diploid, triploid, and tetraploid hybrids on the market. And then pictured here are two other researchers at Michigan State. Linda Hansen is a beet pathologist that we're working with. She's actually the curator of a lot of beet pathogens, and she's the source of the inoculum that we've been using in our greenhouse studies. And then pictured down below to the left is Mitch McGrath. He's been doing some beet genetic work at Michigan State, and we're hoping to collaborate with him in the future. So moving on to our protocol. For the first screen, we used 94 PI accessions. There is a very large beta collection in the PI collection, but there's about 200 table beets in the collection. And once we removed duplicates, that left us with about 94 PI accessions. The second screen included 58 commercial cultivars and some of the publicly available inbreds from the Goldman Lab program. And then we also included one of our inbreds, W364, as a control, and then resistant sugar beet and susceptible sugar beet as well. And we got those from Lee Pinella in Fort Collins. And then for our protocol, because beets are a multi-germ seed, there's multiple embryos per seed. So we seeded about 5 to 8 seeds per pot and then thinned those down to 2 plants per pot. So you can see here, this is, oh, it's not popping up. Down below is before thinning. The picture up above is after thinning. And then we inoculated with a ground inoculum at 8 weeks after planting. And then we had 2 evaluation periods, one at 3 weeks after inoculation, and then 5 weeks after inoculation. So these beets are showing post-inoculation. This is almost immediately before we evaluated, and you can see that there's a range of symptoms in the beets. So these are some pictures from our evaluation process. We recorded the shoot and root mass as well as giving an external and an internal rating for each root. And then we scanned those for our records to provide you guys with pictures to look at as well. So this is our rating system. It goes from 0 to 5. 0, the root surface is pretty much clean. There's no visible lesions, all the way to a 5 where the root is completely rotted. The foliage is either dead or dying, and you can see down here it looks kind of like coffee grounds. Then we gave each root, from the external and internal disease rating, we gave it a weighted average, placing more emphasis on the internal disease rating, because when it comes to processing beets, depending on how far the disease has progressed into the root, really determines how much is lost and discarded during processing. So this is an ANOVA from the PI screen. Our model included accession, evaluation period, and whether or not it was inoculated as fixed effects. All of those were significant. And then the commercial cultivar screen showed a similar trend as well. And then here, we found that inoculation did make a difference as to whether or not there was disease symptoms. So that was good. It confirmed what we were expecting. And then we also found that there was disease progression from 11-week period to 13 weeks. And one thing to note here is that when you're looking at the commercial screen, there's less of a jump. So in between 11 and 13 weeks in the inoculated subset, there's not as much disease progression in the commercial cultivars as compared to the PI screen. And you might note that there was some disease present in the non-inoculated subset, and we're thinking that that's probably due to the fungus gnat problem we had in our greenhouse. They move from pot to pot and spread things. So looking at the PI accession, pictured at the top of the screen are the most susceptible 5 accessions, and down at the bottom are the most resistant 5. So looking at the letters behind the mean disease rating, anything with the same letter is not significantly different. So between those two groupings, they're not significantly different. So we compared the means of those two groups, and that's the p-value pictured there. So there was a difference between the most susceptible and most resistant in the screen. And then we were also interested in looking at how things moved rank-wise between 11 and 13 weeks. So you can see this is the slide I just showed you was 11 and 13 weeks lumped together. This is split up into 11 and 13 weeks. So you can see that there is some rank changes. The bolded PIs were present in the 11 and 13 week average together. But there really isn't much of a significant difference between the rank changes. So we were also interested in looking at if the origin of the germplasm played any role in how resistant or susceptible it was. So looking at this, it's pretty scattered. There was no obvious trends. So we took a different look, and looking at this box plot, there still really isn't a major trend going on with germplasm origin. Down below, the NI was not indicated in the passport information on the GRIN system. But interesting. We're going to take closer looks at that in the future. And then moving back to the commercial cultivar screen, similar thing. The most susceptible are pictured at the top. The most resistant are at the bottom. And then comparing the means of those two groups, there was some significance there again. And I forgot to point out before, but this, for the commercial cultivars, most of them are falling between a 2 and a 3 disease rating. For the PI screen, they actually fell between a 1 and a 2. So in general, the commercial cultivars seem to be less resistant than the PI collection. So then taking another closer look between rank changes between 11 and 13 weeks, again, there are some rank changes. And then looking at all of the cultivars that we screened, there's a wide range of resistance and susceptibility. Down below, we've indicated the lab inbreds from the Goldman lab. And one thing that we were kind of excited about, the blue arrow is the resistant sugar beet. The orange is supposed to be the susceptible sugar beet. It's slightly to the right. And then the purple arrow is one of our inbreds, W364B. So W364B actually was just about as resistant as the susceptible sugar beet. So we're a little bit excited about that. So in conclusion, the PI collection offers a wide range of resistant germplasm that would be useful for increasing resistance in table beets. And then in general, the cultivars were typically less resistant than the PI collection, but one important thing that we noted was they had less disease progression between the 11 and 13 week evaluation period. And this is really important for growers when they're considering harvest time, because if they already have Rhizoc in the field, they don't necessarily need to hurry up and rush. They have a little bit more of a window to go in and harvest. So then for our future directions, we're planning on replicating this study, and then we're also going to be looking into the genetics behind rhizoctonia resistance in table beets. This work has been done in sugar beet, but we're going to be doing it in table beet, and hopefully we'll get that figured out as well. So to do that, we are making crosses between sugar beet and table beet. The picture at the top is sugar beet. The picture down below is the F1 between a sugar beet and a table beet, and it's intermediate in morphology between those two beets, which is I find really interesting. The F2 plants are currently in the field right now, so that's where we're at in that process. So, and with that, I would like to thank Midwest Food Products Association and Vilmorin. They're partially funding my research. And a big thank you to the Goldman Lab for their support, Linda Hansen for the inoculum used in this study, and then Barbara Hillier and Lee Pinella for the germplasm used in the study as well. And with that, I would like to take any questions or comments that you guys have.
I know that in sugar beet there is tremendous heterogeneity within a population. Do you think you really captured all of that in just two individuals?
Oh, so I failed to mention, we replicated this in time, so we had two different planting dates. So we had eight plants. That's why we're going to be replicating this again this following year. We did smaller screens my first year, and we tried to make sure that it was manageable in times of evaluation periods because it takes a lot of time to evaluate them. So we're going to be replicating that again. Yes?
I would also suggest in your crosses to make sure that that beet that you're using is truly susceptible or resistant. We got into a lot of trouble with that with sugar beet.
Ooh, okay. Where do you work at?
I was in sugar beet. I'm a recent transplant to lettuce.
Okay.
But in Salinas.
Cool. Okay. Other questions? Yes?
Any interest in turning table beets into monogerm?
So the question was if there is interest in turning table beets to monogerm. There is actually a couple of cultivars that are monogerm. I think Moneta is one of the ones. There's a couple. So there has been some interest, and I'm guessing that's mostly for machine planting. So we're not specifically working on that in our lab.
One more minute.
Just one more question.
Yeah.
Why do you think, I was really surprised that within your PIs you found a higher level of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that?
I'm still looking through the data. So one thing we did look at was using the passport information where the germplasm was from. There are some cultivars that have been stuck into the PI collection, and we still need to go through and figure out where those were in terms of disease resistance. We haven't taken a closer look at that yet. So I'm wondering if maybe that has played a role in it. But I'm kind of thinking it's probably not too significant, since in general the cultivars tended to score higher in terms of susceptibility. And while they might have been more resistant, they weren't necessarily aesthetically pleasing roots, I guess. They need some work.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.